I'm Mara Lathrop at KPTZ 91.9 in Port Townsend, Washington, and this is Glorious Food, the show about all things edible on the beautiful, green, verdant Olympic Peninsula. Today, we're going to be cooking with pullet eggs, talking with Kellen Lynch about his one-day-a-week bakery, Dalla Notte, and we'll wind up with the farm report. This week, we're going to talk to Jenny Watkins at Ananda Hills Farm. The darkest days of winter are behind us. It's beginning to get light earlier and stay light longer, and it seems that the first creatures who are doing anything at all about it are the chickens. The local egg production, which has been so low for the past few months that my egg lady, Jenny Watkins of Ananda Hills Farm, had to start rationing eggs to her customers. One dozen a week, if she had any at all, no exceptions, and call first to reserve them. Except one week I really needed a second dozen eggs to make a double recipe of my mother's famous creme caramel. And so after bribing Jenny with the recipe, she allowed that my husband and I could each buy a dozen eggs, but to be sure to write it down on two separate transactions in the receipt book that she keeps in the egg room in her barn so that nobody could, you know, justifiably accuse her of favoritism. Sorry, Jenny. Only now, all of a sudden, the eggs are laying, and instead of a dozen eggs, anybody who wants can buy two. The thing about eggs this early in the year is that the pullets, the newly matured young and frisky chickens in Jenny's flock, are laying for the first time. And because of their youth or their friskiness, or actually I don't really know the reason why, but pullet eggs are the richest, most delicious eggs of the entire year, especially if buying them from somebody like Jenny, who feeds them organic feed without a bit of soy in it and keeps them in their rolling chicken coops out in her pasture eating bugs and living as good a life as it's possible to live for a working chicken. Pullet eggs are smaller than regular eggs, as the young hens are still working out the mechanics of the whole egg-laying business. And the thing about cooking with small eggs is to look up an egg size conversion chart and adjust as needed. Remember, baking recipes go by egg volume, not by egg number. But the most important thing to remember is to snatch up those pullet eggs before some luckier cook makes off with them. My mother, who taught me the basics of cooking and, well, pretty much everything else, always said that if you're going to go to all of the trouble of cooking in the first place, if you will just buy the very best ingredients you can find, the battle is already mostly won. You know, my mother would have scoffed at the idea, but she was an artist in the kitchen. And what that woman could do with an egg, well. When my mother traveled to Italy for the first time when she was in her mid-50s, she ate creme caramel, egg custard with caramel sauce, for dessert her first night, and then ordered creme caramel for dessert every single night thereafter as she traveled from Milan to Venice to Florence, Rome, and Naples, because the first one she ate was so good. She said it was a revelation. And when she got home, she set about recreating the exacting, delicious perfection of that first Milanese creme caramel so that she and everyone lucky enough to sit at her table could eat it forever. It took her a couple of years to nail it down, and we frequently ate creme caramel at family gatherings while she discussed with us the pros and cons of the latest batch. The last one was a little creamier, but this one's caramel sauce has perfect toastiness, she might say. Or next time, by upping the vanilla just a smidge or possibly adding a pinch of salt, maybe it would be almost as good as that first creme caramel in Italy. While we all kept our heads down in our bowls, snarfing up delicious custard after ever more delicious custard. Eventually, Mom decided she was satisfied. Well, not satisfied, not exactly, but very close for such a perfectionist in the kitchen. And thereafter, she swore by the recipe that I'm about to give you. My mom's creme caramel has stopped countless conversations, has caused grown men and women to moan embarrassingly at dinner parties like they were having orgasms, and has actually been given more than one standing ovation. My mother would tell you that it's nothing fancy, just eggs, milk, sugar, a little vanilla, and some salt. My mother thought it wasn't ladylike to toot her own horn. Here's what I'm telling you. If you follow this recipe, you will get to eat Esther's Perfect Creme Caramel. Get a pen and paper if you want to write it down, or if you don't, just listen, and after the recipe, I'll tell you how to have me send you a copy. Here we go. 1/4 cup water, 1 cup sugar, 6 large or 8 small eggs, 1.5 teaspoon vanilla, 1 pinch of salt, 2.5 cups whole milk, 1 cup heavy cream. Preheat oven to 350. In a thick bottom frying pan, combine water and 1/2 cup of the sugar. Bring to boil and continue till water is boiled away. Continue cooking sugar without stirring until caramelized. Into 8 custard cups, pour caramelized sugar and let it cool until hard. So how caramelized should it be? According to Esther, it should be darker than a weak cup of tea, but no darker than a really strong cup of tea. Heat the milk and cream until just below a boil. While it heats, beat eggs until pale, then beat in 1/2 cup of sugar, vanilla, and the salt. One time, Esther saw me beating the eggs for creme caramel with a balloon whisk, and she had a cow. "Use a flat egg whisk," she cried, "or it'll turn fluffy, and it's supposed to be smooth." So, using your flat egg whisk, add the heated milk and cream in a slow stream, whisking constantly. Pour through a fine sieve into custard cups over the hardened caramel. Place custard cups in water bath. Bake 30 minutes or until the blade of a dinner knife comes out clean. You can serve creme caramel warm out of the oven, cooled to room temperature, or chilled and straight out of the fridge. To serve, unmold onto dessert plate and pour caramel sauce all around. If you'd like a copy of Esther's Perfect Creme Caramel, drop me an email at gloriousfood@kptz.org. I hope you enjoy it, and let me know how it comes out.
Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. And on that farm he had some chicks, E-I-E-I-O. With a cluck cluck here, a cluck cluck there, loud as they could be.
Ananda Hills Farm is out in the Beaver Valley on Embody Road. Jenny Watkins is the owner. She raises delicious eggs. She reps a line of organic, non-soy chicken feed, and she raises Shetland sheep and sells the wool directly to local spinners. Let's call her now and get the farm report.
This is Jenny.
Hey, Jenny. This is Mara at Glorious Food.
Hi, Mara.
What's going on out at the farm today?
Well, things are looking up as our days are getting longer. The hens are noticing it, so we're seeing more egg production, which is really great.
And what about the sheep? What's up with them?
Well, we'll have lambs in about 4.5 months because I just took the ram out of breeding groups. So that'll be a nice time in spring when we'll actually have some warmth and grass. So that's something fun to look forward to as well.
Jenny, I know that sometimes you teach classes out there, and mm-hmm. sometimes you need volunteers to help with some of the sheep stuff. What do you have coming up if somebody's interested in getting involved?
Well, the next thing that'll be coming up will be Shearing Day, which is an annual event at the farm. It's a big harvest day, really, for our wool crop. And that will likely be the last weekend of March. And I do take hand spinners and knitters, people who are interested in helping out. I take a limited number of people. So if anybody thinks that they would find that process interesting, they can give me a call at the farm, and I'll put them on a list of people that I'll have come that day. But it's a really exciting time to watch, especially if you have some interest in fiber production.
Fantastic. So if somebody wants to do that, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
You know, I guess I'm probably kind of old-fashioned. I'm going to give you my landline and then my email. Those are the best ways to get a hold of me.
Great.
So you can call the farm, the Beaver Valley Farm, at 360-732-0111. Then my email is first two initials of my name, my first name, J-E Watkins, W-A-T-K-I-N-S, @olipen.com. And I check, you know, both of those at least daily, sometimes twice a day.
Great. Thanks for giving us the farm report, Jenny. I hope everything is a beautiful spring for you.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Like I said, it's a really great time of the season. So thanks so much for calling.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
I'll have some clam chowder followed by beefsteak on rye, pumpkin pie, whipped cream and coffee. I want a green salad on the side. Don't forget the French fried pizza pie, garlic and anchovy.
This is Glorious Food on KPTZ in Port Townsend, Washington, and I'm Mara Lathrop. Hey, everybody's got to eat. Kellen Lynch is that tall, good-looking guy who introduces films at the Starlight Room where he's the manager. But every Saturday during the Port Townsend Farmers Market, and once a month in January, February, and March when the market is on winter hiatus, Kellen bakes and sells his amazing handcrafted croissants and scones and yummy breads. His one-day-a-week bakery is known as Dalla Notte Baking. Kellen, Dalla Notte is Italian, isn't it? What does it mean?
It is. It means from the night or of the night.
And how did you pick that as the name for your bakery?
Well, funny enough, Google Translate is a great tool. And I was trying to come up with a name pretty frantically. And I was typing all sorts of bread and bakery questions, or rather just words, keywords, into Google Translate, translating it from English to Italian. I started thinking kind of abstractly because none of them were good. And so of the night became I did from the night as a baker coming out of the night. And so I typed from the night and Dalla Notte came up and it sounded real. It sounded like an actual name. I already had a logo. The girl on the logo, so Dalla kind of applied to her in my head. That's kind of how it came about.
So I see that you brought a loaf of something for us to have an on-the-radio tasting with.
Yes.
Which sounds like a lot of fun, and I think that this is something that we can do as a public service for our listeners to eat a piece of your bread and describe how delicious it is. What do you think?
I think that's a public teasing. I don't know if it's a public service.
Tell me what you brought.
It's the Olympic rye. I make it with 100% locally grown grain. It's all from Nash's and Squim. It's a 75% rye, so it's 75% rye and 25% red winter wheat, all organic, and it's my most popular bread. It has toasted sunflower seeds in it, as well as soaked flax seed and a sourdough as well.
And it comes with a beautiful R carved in the top of every loaf, doesn't it?
Every loaf has an R in it.
So are you going to, cut this bread now so we can start eating it?
I guess I should.
So this bread looks incredible, and I see you brought some cheese to go on it. It's a piece of Asaggio, right?
That's correct. It's Italian.
So I am cutting the cheese.
At least there are.
And here is a piece of cheese and bread, and I'm going to hand it to you. Thank you. And here is a piece of bread and cheese, and I'm handing it to me. So the first thing that I love about this bread, before I even put it in my mouth, is its crumbly texture.
Hmm.
It's almost cakey.
You know why that is?
No.
It's because rye inherently has less gluten, has far less gluten than wheat.
Right.
And gluten is the strength of a loaf. People think of gluten, they don't really know what it is, they have this idea, but gluten is a protein and it is the muscle tissue of bread. So if this was 100% rye, it would be flat because the gluten would not be there holding it up, but this has 25% wheat in it. So it is a boule, it is round and beautiful. That's why it's so soft and crumbly in a sense, but it's not, it doesn't, you know, it's not exactly cake.
And the crust, I don't know if our listeners could hear that, but that was me snapping the crust that was so hard that it snapped when I bit into it.
Mm-hmm. In a good way. The crust is thin. It is not going to cut your mouth like a French baguette might. This is a German-style, traditional German-style bread. This bread actually came about because a local here in Port Townsend came and started requesting it. And she is a German woman and was reminiscing about the bread she could get in Germany. And I was reminiscing with her because I took a trip to Germany about 8 years ago.
And did you eat bread there?
Oh, my goodness. Every meal was this, bread and cheese and slices of meat. Mm-hmm. And it was the best. And there's this bread that they have over there called Dinkel. And it is a black bread, as they call it, which is a rye, but even darker than this. Mm-hmm. It's the best. It's so flavorful.
The other thing about this bread that's fabulous is when you chew into it, you bite into the little seeds. They're not hard. They're kind of soft, and they just sort of pop in your mouth.
It's because they've been soaking for 24 hours in water, and then bake them at, 500 degrees. It works really well. And the toasted sunflower seeds, I think a lot of people don't even realize that's what's giving it so much flavor. But when you toast something like that, it just permeates the entire bread. I did a roasted garlic bread once, and I only roasted probably like 4 heads of garlic for a batch of, 25 to 30 loaves of bread.
Wow.
But in all of the loaves, I was so proud. You could taste. It was like there was roasted garlic spread on the slice.
And are you going to be making that this summer during the market?
Probably.
Good.
Sounds good right now.
Will you save the first loaf for me, please?
Yes.
Oh, excellent. Everybody is now salivating having listened to us eat bread on the radio on their behalf. So where'd you get your start in food?
I think everyone gets their start in food from their family. If you don't have a strong food culture already within your family, you're probably not off to a good start as far as health-wise. But my family cared a lot about food, and I think that's probably where it came from. I became the designated chocolate chip oatmeal cookie baker at age 12. Mm-hmm. They just gave me that job. So that's kind of where it started, and it stayed that way until I was probably 18, and I finally felt motivated to make something more, and it kind of trickled from there.
Tell me about your chocolate chip cookies. You've been making them for a long time. You must be pretty good by now.
13 years. Yep. They're great. They're out of my grandmother's recipe book, the Danish Lutheran recipe book for St. John's in Seattle. So a lot of family and church recipes in there, and chocolate chip oatmeal. It's the best chocolate chip oatmeal cookie that I've had.
Period.
Absolutely.
Great. How did you move from baking cookies for your family into the whole area of baking in a more general and global kind of way?
Right. Definitely school. But before school, I think I was just kind of motivated and inspired from other people. I remember growing up eating the desserts of my mom's friend, Doreen. She would make these amazing chocolate mousses and pies. And so I saw there was more to it than just the cookies. And I knew it wasn't that much harder. And she also gave me my first bread book, which was the Tassajara bread book, of which I made no delicious bread from because I wasn't good at it at all. I didn't respect the recipes. I didn't wait long enough to proof the bread or ferment it at all. And all my loaves were as dense as bricks. But once I got to school, the whole world opens up. And
so where did you go to school?
Seattle Culinary Academy. It's on Capitol Hill. It's part of the Seattle Central Community College. And it's known to be one of the best programs in the state and one of the best on the West Coast. And it's extremely affordable.
Great. And did you take a baking track or did you do the general chef program?
So there's two programs, and one is general culinary. So you learn, what most people think of as a kitchen work, a lot of French style and Japanese style cooking. And the other program is the baking specialty Breads and Desserts is the name of it. And within that, it's a 5-quarter program, very intensive. You learn how to make bread, specialty desserts. You learn how to make cheese, charcuterie, curing meat, pastry, cakes, so much.
Everything then that isn't the main course, the appetizer, yeah, or the salad, pretty much.
Right. It's everything a bakery would do, you know, in, mm-hmm, in France.
Great. So who've been, besides your mom's friend, Doreen, mm-hmm, who else have been your influences?
Just before going to school, I got to work at a food truck, which forever, awesome, threw me on a path that I didn't quite anticipate. It was the Maximus Minimus food truck. It's a big pig. Mm-hmm. It's literally, it looks like a pig. And we served pulled pork sandwiches.
I love those pulled pork sandwiches. They're amazing. I love that pig.
It's really good. I used to sell them. I used to stand out front on 2nd and Pike and watch the world go by. The crazy people, the millionaires, the crazy millionaires, everybody. And it was right next to Pike Place. And so eventually, because Maximus Minimus is owned by Beecher's Handmade Cheese in Pike Place, I've got a job at Beecher's and left the food truck. And so I worked at Beecher's, mm-hmm, for almost 2 years, learning about the best American cheeses. We sold them all, and we made some of the best American cheese, too. And it was great because I was already going to school for it, and we were already learning about cheese and learning how to make cheese. And I had a job where I could just taste it all day. And then also during my schooling, I got a job at Poppy, mm-hmm, which is a restaurant on Capitol Hill. It's casual fine dining, and Jerry Tronfeld owns that restaurant, and of Herb Farm fame in Woodinville. He was chef there for 17 years. That's the restaurant where there's a 6-month waiting list. It's where the president goes to eat in Washington if he's in the area. But Jerry left Herb Farm to start Poppy about 5 or so years ago, and I got to work for him. He was the executive chef, and we served some of the best food in the city. Easily.
And when did you move up to Port Townsend?
I grew up here, and I moved back 2 years ago.
And what prompted the move?
The business. I was living in Seattle. I had just gotten back from traveling to the East Coast, where I finally had my eureka, I have to start the business moment. And I was thinking I could either start my bakery and sell in Ballard, or I could start my bakery and move back to Port Townsend and do this, you know, kind of small farmer's market that I don't really remember going to very much when I lived here. Mm-hmm. But I, for a variety of reasons, chose Port Townsend, and I am incredibly thankful that I came back so soon.
Great. So now that you're back here in Port Townsend, besides your own baked goods, what are the other local baked goods that you can't live without?
Good question. Because I grew up on Pane de Mort, and that's where my mom would get the bread for the house. Grew up on the CD sourdough bread. It's still one of my favorite breads. Mm-hmm. Besides their bread, I gotta give props to Bob. Bob makes the best bagels, that is for sure. And I mean, the sesame flax cookies from Candace, mm-hmm, those have always been a favorite. I've probably eaten more than I would like to have of those. And then Anka's truffles that you can get at the co-op with pistachios on the outside. Those are the highlights of the local baked goods.
So that's what a baker eats. Great.
Oh, I should mention, I live with another amazing baker.
Who do you live with?
I live with Meredith Hotchkiss, and she ran Bread and Honey Bakery last year at the Farmer's Market and made incredible tarts, cakes, macaroons, eclairs. And she and I do the cake picnic every year. This is our third year now. We've made in total about 7,000 slices of cake for Port Townsend at Rhody.
So why don't you talk for a minute about the Rhody Cake Picnic during Rhody Festival?
Well, it's our, like I said, it's our third annual coming up. Each year we serve thousands of slices of cake to the public for free after the Rhody Parade on Saturday, the main grand parade. Down at the Cotton Building on the lawn, we set up and serve to anyone that wants a slice.
So what are you doing for your fundraising this year?
fundraising this year. Last year we had a mailing campaign. We had envelope inserts in the leader. Mm-hmm. We're looking toward to doing that again, potentially. We also threw a fundraising party at Rosewind, which was great. Since this is our third year, we kind of have developed a trust and a base in the community that know we're going to throw this amazing party. They're going to want to see it. Why not give us $5, $10, $50 to make it happen?
Because everybody wants a free piece of cake.
Who doesn't want cake?
Who doesn't want cake?
And that is the underlying thing to this event is we can all come together for one thing, and that one thing happens to be cake.
What are your plans for Doll and Note for the coming year?
I'm always trying to hone my craft. I want to be a master baker, and that takes decades.
So what would be your baker's dream come true? What would you love?
An amazing oven is always an amazing bread oven.
Yeah.
Would be incredible. I get by with what I get by with, and that's two high power convection ovens. Mm-hmm. But I would love a three deck oven that bakes at 500 degrees, and I can fit 30, 25 loaves of bread at once in this oven. That'd be amazing.
That would be. Last but not least, who's your favorite customer?
Well, Mara, you have been at the market and at my bakery since I started, actually. So you are up there.
Oh, that's
but I
good.
I would start a little mob if I singled out one person, I think.
The market's closed right now.
Market is closed right now.
Not opening till April, right?
That's correct. That'll be the first Saturday of April, which I believe this year is the 6th. 6th of April is the first farmer's market.
So where can people buy your bread between now and the start of the market, the Port Townsend Farmer's Market?
Well, that is the question on everybody's lips, or it was in December at the last market. And because of that demand, I have chosen to sell at the co-op once a month in their alcove at the front of the store inside. And I'll be there in March, I believe, on the 16th. But you can check out that information on my website, which is the business name dalanote.com, dalanote.com. So that's updated on the website.
Thank you for joining me, Kellen. It was delicious and fun to talk to you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mara.
That's it today for Glorious Food. I hope to see you again next time. If you've got any questions or comments about food out here on the Olympic Peninsula, be sure to drop me a line at gloriousfood@kptz.org. Thanks for listening.
I always cook with honey to sweeten up the night. We always cook with honey. Some sweet love.
Thanks to my engineer, CJ Lazenby, and thanks also to program director Larry Stein, station manager Nora Petrich, and the guy who never gets any thanks on air, chief engineer Bill Putney. This is KPTZ 91.9 in Port Townsend, Washington. I'm Mara Lathrop. Thanks for listening.